We're back, everybody. I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, Gerardo Del Real, here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's an investor and publisher of Daily Profit Cycle, amongst other things, of course, that many, many things that Nick does. This is the 363rd, holy moly, Nick, the 363rd episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk markets, what we're investing in, what we missed in the past couple of weeks. I'm ready, Nick. It's good to be back. How have you been, sir? I know we were on site visits. You were on two. I was on one. We were together for the one that I was at. Things are cooking. How are you? How's your beautiful family?
You usually say amongst the hats, the different hats that I wear, and you're the one with the hat on this week. That came very abruptly as we started. I'm doing great. Family's good. Happy Mother's Day. Happy birthday to my wife this week. Tell me about the hat.
Tinfoil hat time, man. I'm fully locked in. I don't believe shit anymore. I'm not going
to
start with...
Welcome to the club.
Hey, I mean, look, I don't believe that the Butler assassination attempt was not staged. I believe that was staged now. I'm all in on that one. I haven't heard anything about that guy. Trump has time for everybody except for the kid that supposedly tried to kill him. I went back and looked at like some video of the Ronald Reagan assassination attempt just to kind of remember what those are supposed to look like. And I was like, nah, that thing's staged, man. There's a new virus, the Hentavirus, that apparently now is, you know, we'll talk about that later on. What else don't I believe? Did you see the attempt on the president's life at the White House Correspondents' Dinner a few weeks back?
I saw the gentleman run through security, blasting. Yep.
So those were Secret Service people. That wasn't like Nick and me and like 10 of our friends that were there to protect the people inside of that, right? Our Secretary of War, in all his glory, his Christian glory, was there. And, our Director of FBI, in all his glory, was there. The President was there. Melania was there. This was like the event where you get like the creme de la creme, the best of the best, to frontline security for all of these people. And I saw the footage, man. I'm surprised they even put it out. There were 12 people there from the door. I'm including the dog, by the way, who was the MVP. But there were 12 people there from the door to where eventually he was tackled. 10 of those people did nothing. They just watched and chased him. The one person or the one being that actually did its job was the dog. The dog was signaling to the guy with the AR-15 or the semi-automatic or automatic weapon, like woof woof, like woof woof, bad guy, right? Woof woof. Nothing happened there. The guy went outside, looked, didn't see anything. Seconds later, this guy comes barreling through the door, you know, cocked and loaded, ready to go. He runs through security. He runs right past like 5 or 6 guys. And then eventually, from what I'm told, the shots that were fired from one Secret Service agent accidentally into another. So like one of two things, man, either this is very possible, this is the most incompetent administration that I've ever seen in my lifetime. Or we're just going to keep getting this stuff to delay the Epstein files. And so, you know, I heard a whisper earlier. This is my tinfoil hat speaking now, that we're going to get disclosure on aliens. Trump himself said it, that he's got some stuff he's going to put out here in July. And, you know, they're going to release as much as they can. So be ready for that. And I'm like, I'm just fully convinced that this administration will do absolutely anything and everything to avoid releasing what's in those files. And I absolutely believe we have compromised government. And look, we've won the Iran war 100 times. We won it 3 times just today. We've had 4 deals today, right? And it's only 3 p.m. here in Austin. And yet, the last bit of news 10 minutes ago that I got is that the Middle Eastern countries that were opposed to us using their Air Force bases for strikes are now okay with it. And then simultaneously, we get news that we're also going to supply them with like tens of billions of dollars in new weaponry. So I say all that to say, apparently everything's on the table for 2026, which makes me look at some of the things before that happened prior to all the chaos, including the Butler assassination attempt, including Charlie Kirk, by the way. I'm starting to believe that, you know, it might have been his mic that blew up and it wasn't a shot from a distance. I don't know. It's crazy out there. How are you? What do you think about all the craziness going on?
You know, I've been so busy. I've sort of tuned the craziness out. Like I said, when you started, welcome to the club. I've known that it was crazy for a long time. I think that I don't know if it's an inept administration or, you know, human nature and complacency. I was going to quote to you Sturgill Simpson from a song called Call to Arms, where he says, you know, nobody's looking up to care about a drone. We're all too busy staring down at our phones, right? And I think that, you know, is one that feeds into these conspiracies and the negative doom scrolling and negative feedback that we get on all this crazy stuff. And as it pertains to the Secret Service, man, they're human and prone to error like anybody else. I don't know if you saw, that's what I was typing away when you were talking, because I saw a story the other day about a Secret Service agent that was on duty just last week or earlier this week. When does this come from?
Guy in Florida.
May 5th. Yeah, jerking off in the hallway while he's on duty, a Secret Service agent. Not like dicking around jerking off, like jerking off.
Yeah, followed a woman back to her hotel room and stood outside of it. Mind you, again, this wasn't like some random Secret Service agent. This is one of the ones that was assigned to provide protection for President Trump. And so it's just absolutely nuts out there. We got Democrats and Republicans working to authorize warrantless spying again on American citizens. Yeah. And again, it's both sides doing it. It's just crazy out there. So anyway, had to get that off. I'll take the hat off for now, but.
Well, that happens. We took a week off. You gotta start therapy out strong, get it all out there.
Holy moly.
And put it in the ether, yeah.
That's it. Well, listen, you touched on it up top. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there that go above and beyond and do all the things that make our lives funner and easier and more pleasant. So salute to all the great moms out there, including my beautiful wife and my beautiful sister, who are two of the most phenomenal moms that I happen to know. Let's get to it. I talked about how many times we've won the war just today, and then how many times we're back re-engaging in the war, and how many times we've struck a deal with Iran. I'm convinced that, you know, I think this administration and other people in it are absolutely compromised to the point where we're likely to go back in some way, shape or form until we realize as a country, unfortunately, that fighting this war on Israel's behalf with Israel committing zero ground troops, openly committing a zero ground trips while simultaneously shooting up anybody in Gaza that's out there just looking for aid and looking for food and looking for medicine and trying to survive. I don't see which other way it goes other than that being the case. Now, with that being said, let me listen to the markets a little bit, right? Let's get to that. The dollar was below the 98 level, touched the 97 level. It's at 98.17. It perked up a little bit after the recent 10, 15 minutes. Oil was down as low as 85, 86 a barrel. It perked back up to 96. So the dollar and oil, which we said 2 weeks ago, talk to me as far as the direction this thing is going in, are telling me that, you know, there's likely to be a weekend escalation. I hope I'm wrong, but it sure does look like Israel's got, you know, is playing puppet master with our military. And, you know, I wish all the best for all our brave men and women out there. But tough to see. And economically, I mean, I have to believe China's just sitting back looking at this whole thing going, man, like we couldn't have conducted a more strategic way to debilitate American firepower, American treasury, and American morale. And so that's where I'm at. That's my take on that.
Yeah, China's the long-term boogeyman. Markets-wise, I mean, dollar's weak. Oil kind of rolled over the past couple of days. It was down, I think, you know, 12% or thereabouts in a couple of days. On these truce talks, VIX, I'm just going to give you the whole macro take, yep, for, if you don't mind.
No,
you
that's know, what VIX I wanted.
is completely fallen off a cliff. It's, you know, back to pre-war levels. And the markets, in terms of the stock market, put in the best rally in April that we've seen in, like, I don't know, 75 years or something like that. So all stocks back to all-time highs, S&P 500 all-time highs, NASDAQ all-time highs, Russell 2000 representing the small caps all-time highs. Go look at some of the other largest nations' stock markets in the world. The KOSPI in South Korea, all-time highs. The Nikkei in Japan doing very well. The DAX in Germany doing very well. Hey, commodities breaking out. I pulled up the chart for you 2 weeks ago with the cup and handle on the CRB commodity index and the leg there going straight up to a new breakout in commodities. And it's really... Well, it's really across the board, but it's the softs and the agricultural commodities that are driving it right now. I mean, go look at a chart of cotton or soybean or corn or aluminum or nickel,
potatoes.
But things that aren't even in the index,
yep.
Like lithium is going back up, as you well know. And so it's vastly inflationary. And a couple of weeks ago, many folks, including myself, were talking about stagflation, talking about how these high oil prices and inflation was going to stagnate growth. And that's sort of the thing that's tough to comprehend. And the reason that this is all fresh in my mind is because I was trying to wrap my head around it all because I was writing my monthly macro issue this week for Foundational Profits. And I was like, man, like this, it doesn't make sense. While you and I were away traveling, which we'll talk about in a second, first quarter GDP came out. It came out at 2% positive economic growth.
Yep.
On a SAR, seasonally adjusted annual rate. That's much higher than it was in the fourth quarter of 2025 at 0.5% growth. And now the estimates are saying you'll likely see that same level of growth, if not slightly more, in the current quarter that we're in. And you scratch your head with your tinfoil hat on it and wonder, how can that be with all the things that you just said, right? The administration, the wealth inequality, the war, the high fertilizer prices. How can it be that the economy is still going up? And frankly, the answer is it's just still running hot. Like, look at look at jobless claims. I think they printed the lowest jobless claims in, I don't know, 30, 40 years, something like that.
It's just people need three jobs to survive.
It was more. It was like since 1969. And then look at Dr. Copper above $6.
Yeah.
If he's evaluating the health of the economy, the doctor says all is well. And so it's really tough to wrap your head around. But as I was writing today in the weekly issue, like, there's nothing but awesomeness. Like, there's nothing that's not going up except volatility and the dollar, right? And that dollar going down is good for everything I just said. Commodities, stock prices that are priced in dollars. Two more things. Let me get them out. Bond yields are still in an uptrend. That's putting a little, not a cap on gold, but it's making other natural resources more attractive in the interim. And even Bitcoin has turned around in the past couple of weeks, over 80,000, absorbing some of that liquidity that's in the system that's helping the economy overcome the inflation that's quickly going to go to 4%. So I was really trying to be bearish, but everything's going up, man. Like, if you don't buy it, you're going to get left behind. And last thing, and I'll let you get back on the horn there, is like some stuff is going up crazy. Like I mentioned the KOSPI already. Go look at that. It's up like 30 or 40% year to date.
Yeah.
Year to date. We're in May. We're not even halfway through yet. Go look at a stock like Caterpillar or some of these industrial stocks that are you know, building the AI data centers, which I want to talk about a little bit later. Caterpillar is up like 35% year to date. I mean, that's like the largest industrial name there is, right? So there's a lot to not like out there in terms of the way things are being done, as you already laid out very well. There's obviously wealth inequality and a K-shaped recovery that continues. We may or may not all die from the hantavirus, but you're going to die with your account at all-time highs as long as you don't convince yourself to be bearish when everything else is going up.
Yeah, and look, a quick point there, because everyone knows, well, anybody that's watched this for the past couple of years or even a couple of months knows my sandbox exclusively is the smaller, higher risk, higher reward junior resource stock. So you have two types of stocks right now. You have the big market stocks and then the developers, the producers that are profiting from, you know, these high prices in copper, resurging prices in lithium touching 3-year highs, gold back above 4,700, silver touched 82 earlier today, flirting with 80. So you have those companies that are seeing that go straight to their bottom line and their share prices and their valuations obviously increase in record numbers. And then you have the other companies that are at the bottom end of that totem pole, which is where I play and dabble and speculate and make the bulk of my living from. And those are mostly the explorers. And those explorers are going to continue to need catalysts. They're not just going to go up because the overall market is going up. They're going to need catalysts. So I would say, look, I think I look today and I see a lot of green on my personal screen. And then I see a couple of stocks that are just flat. And then I look at a 1-month chart and I'm like, a couple of them are flat to down. We'll touch on those here in the premium portion of the podcast. But as long as you know why those stocks are flat to down, again, going back to knowing what you own, then you should be okay owning and even adding at certain points. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on. So we need catalysts, we need drilling, we need discoveries. Those companies are being handsomely rewarded if they provide the market the juice it needs, because the market's juiced up. And I think it's going to continue to be juiced up. I had a good conversation with a friend earlier, and we were talking about the potential for a recession. And he was asking me about a 2008 like recession. I said, I don't think we see that. I said, now, the reason I don't think we see that, there's too much liquidity. And I think, you know, with the incoming Fed, they have two options. One, which they're doing right now, they're juicing the stock market. That's going to continue. And I absolutely believe later on this year, if stagflation continues to play itself out the way it's playing itself out, the way I think it will continue to play itself out, then I think we get in back into, you know, a quasi QE where we're suppressing rates down and we're in there in the treasury market buying bonds and getting those rates down by printing more cash. Hugely bullish for gold. Hugely bullish for commodities.
That's when gold is going to rip, but it's not going to come until you got your swimming trunks on across the nation late summer when you're getting ready to go back to school. Yeah,
absolutely. Agree with you 100%. So to that point, this is the time to be positioned for that, folks. And I think, you know, in a lot of companies, they have the catalyst where they're drilling in the summer. You're going to get assays right around the same time that I think gold is going to be ripping, you know, towards $6,000. Forget, you know, surpassing five again. Copper, I think, is going to surprise a lot of people. Lithium, I think, I know it surprised a lot of people because I see people arguing about it. And that took longer than we thought it was going to take, but we knew it was coming, and it's absolutely here. Uranium, get your uranium positions topped off. There's a lot of good cheap stock out there with quality management teams that should be commanding higher market caps and will. And you're going to look back at these months and go, okay, damn, like it's doubled now that they're doing something, or at least doing something publicly. Why didn't I buy this thing at 20 cents? Now it's 50 cents, 60 cents, 70 cents, right? It happens quick, folks.
Claws out on Twitter when people aren't on the right side of things, when people aren't in position.
You know, and it's going to be what it's going to be. And anybody that knows, that plays the game, knows that, you know, if you put it out there publicly, whether you're bullish or bearish, I mean, you're either going to be right or you're going to be wrong. I'm going to continue to be right on some things. I'm going to continue to be wrong on other things. It's never personal unless people make it that. And even then, like, unless I can see you in person, like, I wish you the best, man. I got too much going on in life and good health and family and blessings and all that to really engage in the nonsense. But I see some people out there, you know, peeved with each other. And I'm excited for where the portfolio sits, how we're positioned. Let's talk a little bit about gold and silver, because they both had really good weeks. I'm curious to see where they end the week tomorrow, but I know you've looked at charts. I know you're the technician amongst us. Where do you see each?
Silver's back to bullish. So, you know, I was telling you a little while ago, it was a short term, relatively bearish, and long term, still bullish. It's back to bullish, as you said, over $80. It's got support in the, $73, $74 area. Gold is bullish as well, down to, in the short term, like 45 and change, 45.40, 45.50. Can go much lower than that and still be in a long-term bull market, somewhere down around below $4,000. So long-term, both of those metals are fine. As I was saying, they have rate headwinds in the short term, right?
Sure.
You've got the 10-year and the 2-year that's been going up, and that's why other commodities have been more exciting. In fact, I'll just give you a little sneak preview of the foundational profits issue that is coming out tomorrow.
Look at
where
that.
I was writing about the CRB commodity index. So over the past 3 months, cotton, wheat, soybeans, corn, live cattle, copper, all those I just said, live cattle, corn, soybeans, wheat, and cotton, all outperforming copper, silver, and gold. Over the past 3 months, that just has to do with the bond yields being inversely correlated to the harder assets. Copper's done the best out of the silver and the gold. And again, they're all long-term bull markets, and I just gave you the levels. But for the liquidity, for the fertilizer fears that you've been talking about and that continue to materialize, that's why the softs are leading the pack. The farmers literally can't get enough of the stuff to put down on the ground to grow the things that come out of the ground. And so those are doing better than the golds and the silvers, again, until later this summer. And that's what I was having trouble wrapping my head around. Like, I was looking at the chart and I was like, really? Really? Okay. okay. And then I finally convinced myself. I was like, yeah, it's going to take a couple of more months for all this to work its way through. And then as we've already said a couple of times, I think late summer, you do get those rate cuts once WSSH gets approved and is installed. And big midterms, which we haven't mentioned yet, come closer. And this affordability crisis that Trump is facing and an approval rating is going to demand, the independent Federal Reserve to cut rates.
But we have a ballroom that's going to be privately funded, and we have a free UFC. Oh no, damn it. They changed that up too. It's not going to be privately funded by his friends anymore. You and me are going to pay for that. It's not going to be 200 million. It's going to be a billion, but we're going to get an awesome UFC card right at the White House, folks, right in front of it.
Man.
Just gladiator style fights at the White House. What a metaphor for the 250th year of America and where we are in this country on our 250th year. Putting on the show for the masses to distract them from all of the stuff that it really affects them in real life, like going to the grocery store or putting gas in the tank or seeing your kid go off to the Middle East to go fight a war for someone else. It's absolutely insanity where we're at with that right now. And despite all of that, stocks are going higher, commodities are going higher. The real world isn't the stock market, folks, and the stock market isn't the real world. Don't confuse the two because you're going to miss out on a lot of gains.
Yeah, that's the stuff that crawls under my skin, right? The spending, especially when you're telling people you're going to drain the swamp and you're going to do the Doge thing and this, that, and the other thing. And then you're just out there running the budget up to 40 trillion and, requesting $1.5 trillion in defense spending, which I hear they're going to pare back to just only half a trillion, but we'll see how that goes in the current budget. And yeah, the new ballroom and all that sort of stuff, that wanton spending is definitely the stuff that I'm opposed to and flies in the face of what this president ran on, as does the war. So I think there's some MAGA reckoning coming. But again, I try to stay pretty damn agnostic. I learned my lesson many, many years ago on the political front with Mr. Obama and his promises that were then failed.
I hear you. I hear you. You touched on copper. Copper looks pretty. Copper looks really pretty sitting at 604 on the spot. I'm assuming you're bullish on that short term, midterm, and long term now.
That's it. So look, yeah, no, it's like the economy is running hot, and I'm not poo-pooing the gold and silver. I'm just saying that the other resources and commodities are a better trade right now for the next 2, 3, 4 months. And copper is one of those. It's not affected by fertilizer like the soft commodities are. But when the economy is running hot and you've got the industrials up, as I already talked about, with Caterpillar, et cetera, I think industrials are probably like the fourth best performing sector of the S&P year to date. When that economy is running hot like that, and you've got these required industrial inputs, that's really good for copper, obviously. I mean, copper could go to, 610, 620, 630 in short order. And the other ones that are in the CRB commodity basket, like aluminum, has been the best of the metals that are in that basket. And nickel's not done too shabby either. So it's those industrial inputs that are doing well. And maybe I'll just mention, because I think I threw it on the list of things I wanted to talk about. But and let me see if I can find the article real quick so I actually get something right. is the AI spending, which is absolutely off the charts, man. Do I have the
Paul
right
Tudor thing? Jones was on CNBC. I saw a clip. I don't watch CNBC, but I do listen to Paul Tudor Jones when he speaks, and he was saying, "I'm loading up on AI stocks again." He said he said the markets are absolutely crazy right now, but I've been on the side where I try to be rational and I miss out on gains, and I'm not going to do that this go around. And I'm paraphrasing that last part.
Yep.
But he said it well.
I'm not paraphrasing right now. I'm going to read just from the New York Times.
There
in the
go.
First 3 months of the year, four companies, you know what they were, Meta, Microsoft,
Nvidia,
Amazon, and Google, plowed $130 billion in CapEx into AI data centers. $130 billion in the first 3 months, and they're not done yet. The New York Times reminds you that's 71% higher than it took to complete the Manhattan Project, but that's neither here nor there. And the company said they would be spending even more, totaling roughly $700 billion this year. Blah, blah, blah. It goes on to break it down by company. And then it says these companies just reported earnings, which is another reason the stock market's going up, by the way. These, whatever you want to call them at this point, I don't know what they are, the Mag 7 or the Fangs or whatever the fuck they are, the AI, the tech stocks, These four companies, the ones I just mentioned, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, Meta, in the first quarter generated $430 billion in revenue and $151 billion in profit. And they're plowing that right into these data centers, which is that loop that I just mentioned, right? Like, yeah, the AI stocks are one thing, and the XLK, the technology sector, did turn around. NASDAQ is up like 15% for the year. But I think I mentioned a couple of episodes ago, like, go look at these industrial names. Go look at GE Vernova. Go look at Caterpillar. Go look at ETN, Eaton, for example, or Emerson, EMR. Like, these stocks are ripping. These are the backbone infrastructure plays that are building these actual data centers that are the net beneficiaries of that $700 billion that's going to be spent. And then, of course, you need all the things that you can drop on your foot to actually build those data centers. And that's the answer to your copper question. Yeah, it looks really good.
All right.
The industrial commodities and the industrial inputs they're ripping.
The world is crazy. Everything is awesome on the market side, folks. That's the summary of the first 29 minutes of this week's
Has it been that
podcast?
Long?
I tell you, bulk of that was probably my tinfoil hat rant, which I got some more later, but I'll save a little bit of it. Look, jurisdiction matters. You and I have known that for quite some time. It is becoming more and more critical to make sure that you understand where the company you own operates in and what the risk is. Just like everything is local in Mexico and some parts are great and some parts I don't go to for different reasons, right? It's like that everywhere right now. And if you can find a company that's got the goods in a good jurisdiction and vet it out, you're going to do incredibly well on this cycle. And that's why we missed you all last week. Nick and I were on a site visit here in the US to two different companies. I visited one. Nick joined along. Our video audio was Tim was with us. That was a great, great visit for several reasons. One, we got a much better understanding of the infrastructure. Two, a much better understanding of the local economy and the necessity for good paying jobs if they can do that responsibly down the road. That's a development angle, not so much an exploration, which this company is. The scale of the multi-commodity, including critical metals mix that this company has, was impressive. And the fact that I think they just completed a phase one program. I'm not giving you the name, but if you know me, you can guess it. They completed a phase one program that to me was very successful for a first pass program, hitting gold, hitting critical metals. They didn't hit the big, long, long grades that everybody hoped for, that everybody knows exist on that project. The company, and this was valuable in getting to meet with them in person, has a much better handle on where to stick those holes. They know the structures, the orientation, in which direction the mineralization goes. They've dug out a lot of stuff that was hidden beneath dirt. And, you know, some of those targets I just looked at, I'm not a geologist, and I'm telling the company, can you please go stick four holes in that big clump of rock that's this wide that has 4% lithium popping out of it, right? And so I think the phase two program is going to be a lot more successful in defining the higher grades, the longer widths. And again, the phase one program was a solid, solid program, especially with a company with a tiny market cap, which is what I absolutely love doing, is finding these companies before they take off and become the PMATs or the Q2s of the world. So that was a great visit. You continued on and were a trooper and headed back to the Midwest to go look at a company that also has a multi-commodity portfolio there, also past producing. What were your thoughts on that?
That was a good site visit. That's a VMS deposit called the Pinocchian Volcanogenic Belt, where we used to, as a country, mine a lot of copper and zinc and silver and gold and lead, and still do to some extent. Like the Upper Peninsula of Michigan has gotten back on board, Minnesota not so much, but Wisconsin, where I was, trying to open back up, still has opposition, as mining does everywhere. You've got to deal locally and make sure you're talking to the people, but the results that are coming out of the ground are pretty impressive, higher than the historical results, higher than the historical resource that the company has in terms of gold and silver and copper. And they were in the mineralization while we were there. Like we, you know, I peeked my head like in the drill, right? While the drillers were drilling and
yeah.
the core was coming out. This isn't it. This is the core from the one you were talking about, though. A little bit of white pegmatite there. I don't know if you can see it.
Oh, yeah.
Blurry or not, but you were standing on many thousands of tons of that. We got some nice pictures. And so, look, I think the United States and Canada is a good place to be. I think that on the whole, people are starting to realize the criticality of these resources. Going back to my AI talk just 3 or 4 minutes ago, that we need these resources yeah. for whatever it is, to drop the bombs on Iran, to build the AI data centers, to drive your electric cars, to doom scroll on your phones. It used to be foreign. I mean, even 20 years ago, I remember Greg McCoach, I'm sure you know Greg, yeah. saying like he used to go around to elementary schools and, you know, ask the kids in middle schools if they were pro mining or anti or against mining. And he would always tell the story that, you know, there would always be a majority of kids that said, you know, mining's bad for the environment, we shouldn't be doing it. And he would go get the trash can in the classroom and tell them all to put their devices in the trash can because he can't have any of that stuff sure. without the mining. And that worked for a while. But then what happened is, and I finally got the book that I've been talking about
hey.
A couple of weeks ago that I was going to have it, is now you've got a mineral war with China, right? Where even this week, the energy, the Bloomberg Energy newsletter, one of the main stories this week was about, you know, China continuing to crack down in various ways,
correct.
Either by stockpiling or limiting exports or whatever it is, right? And I'm not going to recite the entire thesis because I've done so a lot and it would take forever. But, you know, for the past, you know, 3, 4, 5 year plans that China's had, it's been about securing these critical yep. minerals and making sure that they're producing and processing, then no matter what the external cost were, they don't pay a true cost of capital because of the labor and environmental conditions that they operate under. They don't internalize those costs, etc. And so anyway, my answer is a bit, not that it's an answer, I guess we're just having a discussion, but folks are starting to realize that. That was one of my main takeaways from the Wisconsin site visit. They've got a gentleman who has been, you know, working in Minnesota, Michigan, and Wisconsin for over 35 years, going back to like the Flambeau mine and stuff like that.
Yep.
And, you know, he's talked to all these folks and farmers and politicians, you know, knows the governors and the congresspeople and all that sort of stuff. And he's saying that, look, man, like, yeah, there's some sensitive folks, like there's some environmental sure. groups that have even come to site and looked around. But on the whole, even the Democrats in these states, and Wisconsin's a truly purple state, like it goes back and forth. I think they've got a Democratic governor now, but and a Republican legislature, and that might flip in the next section. They have a gubernatorial election later this fall. These people get it, is what he was saying, not just because of the jobs, but because like there's nowhere else to go. And when I read articles, sorry, I'm giving you a long answer.
No, this is great.
When I read articles about like anti or folks that are opposed to mining, there's always like a caveat, right? It's like, yeah, we know that we need these minerals, but we don't want to mine them here. And it's like that NIMBYism is the reason that we're in the situation that we're in terms of mineral production and processing, as well as like nuclear. You know, you don't want to build these things in your backyard, but at the end of the day, you got to build them somewhere or you end up reliant on somebody else. And so I should have highlighted some passages for you, but I didn't. Although I said I was going to read from this book 2 weeks ago. So let me just tell you this. This is talking about the stockpiles of these metals that China has right now.
Mm.
It says analysts speculate that China's reserve holdings include 100 tons of indium, which is 10% of the annual production. They have that in reserve. 22,000 tons of molybdenum oxide, which is also 10% of global production. 40,000 tons of rare earth oxides, which is a third of annual production. They have that. They're just holding that in reserves.
Mm-hmm.
30,000 tons of tungsten concentrate and as much as 50,000 tons of nickel. 7,000 tons of refined cobalt. They're just holding this stuff off the market. We don't have anything near that, let alone the capacity to make it and produce it on our own. And so anyway, all that stuff's going to continue to come home to roost. And I got way off topic there with the Wisconsin thing.
No, we're talking about jurisdiction and critical metal supply and security of it, and why we were down there and why we, you know, spent the time and the expense away from family to go look. It's so important.
Last thing, I'm going to hog the mic for one more thing, because, you know, I've said for a long time, I rarely go into Africa. I certainly don't go into Africa for energy metals. I don't go in there for base metals, and I rarely go in there for precious metals. I did some rocks gold way back in the day, but I just wanted to read. So right now there's 18 positions in the Underground Alpha portfolio. And if you'll indulge me for just one second, it's Australian copper, Ontario PGMs, precious and base metals in Argentina and Peru, gold in Ontario, copper in the Yukon, copper in Argentina, lithium in Quebec, uranium in the US, gold in Peru and Argentina, gold copper in British Columbia, rare earths and uranium in the US, uranium in Canada and Saskatchewan, lithium in Quebec, copper in British Columbia, and gold in the United States. What is that, five countries, something like that? Yeah. Mostly the United States and Canada, Argentina and Peru. I mean, yeah, you don't got to get crazy, man.
Yeah, jurisdiction matters. Anybody that is wondering, you know, what happens when negative comments come from like the president of a country, go look at GoldQuest this week, right? They have a project that was on everybody's mind, you know, hitting, you know, 3-4 meters of 18 grams a ton gold equivalent and, you know, PEA stage and doing metallurgical work. And they've been at that for quite some time. And look, there's been protests there, and the government says there's too much opposition to this project. We don't think this is going to move forward. That stock got $500 to $600 million shaved off its market cap. It went from a high of 270 a month and a half or two ago to where it sits today at 41.5 cents. It didn't do that over the course of those 2.5 months. It did that over the course of 2 days. That's how violent it can be, and that's how important jurisdiction is going to be. So when we talk about some of our favorite names that we've held through downturns, and we'll pivot to the premium portion of the podcast because there's a good conversation to be had there, especially like in the lithium space where it was like a brutal year and a half, and I'm going, just if you know what you own and you don't have to sell it, just hold it. Doesn't matter what it's doing right now. The lithium will be back. Lithium is back, and those stocks are slowly but surely having themselves a heck of a month here over the past 30 days as lithium continues to rise. And back to your point, Nick, Zimbabwe instituted an export ban on a lot of its lower quality lithium exports in late February. Not a coincidence that now that China, through Africa, can't flood the market the way that it had been for the last year and a half, lithium prices are sitting at a 3-year high. That's a trend that continues. And now we're going to see structural deficits, I think, materialize in the lithium space that are going to make for really, really, really profitable years here over the next 12 to 24 months, at the very least, in the lithium space.
Yeah, I think that the sales continue to go well. I think eventually you see the Chinese models for sale in North America in some capacity. They're clearly leading the pack. I think CATL's got a battery now, a lithium iron phosphate battery that can be charged in like 10 or 15 minutes.
Yep.
And some of that comes from this book as well. It goes into how they took, you know, lithium iron phosphate's a US-based technology, right?
Yeah.
And somehow, lo and behold, they get the patents through manipulative trade practices or whatever, and they take a technology that might be second or third best, and they don't care if they lose money at it for 10 or 15 or 20 years, right? That's what I was saying with their last 4 or 5 year plans. Like, this is, they've been thinking about this stuff for decades now, right? And that's why, like, the best batteries come out of China, the best electric cars come out of China, and people are starting to want that stuff, and that's gonna just, I think, yield further sales. It's still been sort of a rough row to hoe in the adoption of electric vehicles, but you can get these batteries charging in 10 or 15 minutes. I think that changes the game a lot. And as well as the grid, a lot of news coming out now about how much, you know, grid storage is available as well. And so all of that stuff still fundamentally bullish for the lithium sector.
Couldn't agree more. Anything else you want to add to the non-premium portion of the podcast there, Nick, that's burning at you?
No, not too much burning. I'm feeling pretty good.
There we go.
Oh, you had Ted Turner on there. You want to talk about
look,
or
man,
greedflation?
One of the last great billionaires, right? And look, Ted Turner was somebody that, you know, used his billionaire status to get cable TV. I mean, he was a pioneer of, you know, the structure that modern, or it's not modern anymore, but cable TV was pioneered by this gentleman. And eventually, you know, that model was extended into the streaming model that we see today. The other thing, the guy just loved wrestling. So he spent a lot of his money getting that brand out there and getting that in everybody's TVs at home. And so, no, I think, look, by all accounts, public accounts, I didn't know the man, obviously, but by all public accounts, Ted Turner was someone that, for the most part, did things the right way in the business world, used his wealth to do some good things, and had Jane Fonda on his arm for a long time. That should count for something as well, because Jane Fonda is Jane Fonda. You have to put some respect on Jane Fonda.
It's funny you say that. My mother-in-law is visiting this week, and I was, you know, sitting here at my desk, as I do for many hours a day, and I was scrolling, and I was like, oh, shit, Ted Turner died. And she heard me, and she was like, she didn't quite know who it was. She was like, I think that's Jane Fonda's husband.
That's right.
And I was like, yes, well, that's correct, among many other things. So I did not know Ted Turner either, although I did meet the man one time.
That's right.
in a former life on a cruise boat in Long Beach, California, when I was, you know, writing about the clean technology, and he had Turner Renewable Energy, because the man had his hand in everything, as many billionaires do. So I just took a scroll through the Wikipedia page today just to see exactly what those things were that the gentleman had his hand in. And it was a lot, right? I mean, at one point, he was the largest landowner in the United States. He owned the largest private herd of bison in the United States. That's like Pablo Escobar shit with hippopotamuses, right?
Yeah. I
mean, he's just doing it with bison in the United States.
Yeah.
And the thing I wanted to talk about, among, you know, many other things, go take a look at what he did, from founding CNN to TBS and TNT and all that sort of stuff.
Philanthropy,
Where you watch your, you know, baseball and basketball playoff games, among, you know, many other things. Was he owned, or at least acquired back in the day in the 80s, the company that owned WCW Wrestling, which as a child of the 80s and early 90s, I was definitely a WCW man, not a WWF man. I was thoroughly a fan of Sting, which was owned by Ted Turner, until it, you know, got acquired by WWF and Mr. McMahon in the early 2000s. If we ever do want to talk wrestling, we can have on Mr. Curl. He knows all that history. But I didn't know the gentleman owned WCW. So rest easy, Mr. Turner.
That's it. He's also got one of the best quotes on how to manage four girlfriends when asked about it after his divorce to Jane Fonda, in part because of the infidelity, though they remain good friends to the end. And I'll read the quote. I won't paraphrase this one. I'll read it. He was asked about, do you have four girlfriends? And he goes, well, they're good friends with me. Like most of the time, you know, like good friends are with each other. You know, some of them and some aren't. It's a little complicated. So, I mean, the man was transparent. But look, you know, condolences, him and his family lived a rich life, figuratively and metaphorically and practically. And so, yes, hope you rest easy. He got 87 years out of this thing. We should all be so lucky, right?
That's it.
Excellent. Let's get to the premium portion of the podcast. I am Gerardo Del Real, along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 363rd episode of our weekly therapy session we call Investing in Bizarro World. Have a good one, everybody.
See ya.